think the one that surprises people the most is cilantro. I used to not like cilantro, and now I do. And I don't have the soap gene. Right? I know what soap tastes like. It is not cilantro.
Okay.
but that's a new flavor that I'm just now coming around to.
Hello and welcome. My name is Roxanne Kilborn and I am your host for Project Good Food. And this podcast is about food sovereignty, justice, and liberation through good food. Tonight, our episode will be a personal journey with food. And we have several people here with us. We have Kelly Gray, and I'll have her introduce herself.
Thank you so very much. I love your energy, Roxanne. Whenever you enter the room, it always shines. I am Kelly Gray. I am a member here at Project New Village, a value-added food coordinator. And I'm excited to talk here today about food and how we all come together around a table, around a plate, and to share a meal.
Thank you, Kelly. We also have Cynthia Quinones. I'm so glad you're here, Cynthia. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Thank you, Roxanne. I'm so glad to be here. I'm a retired, semi-retired, not quite sure yet what I'm doing, retired chef coming out of the healthcare system, but long time San Diego good food activist. So I've known Ms. Moss here for several years, at least going back until about 2013, maybe even before that. So just really glad to be here talking about good food with y'all.
And we're so happy you're here as well.
Thank you.
And we have Miss Diane Moss, and she's going to tell you, you probably know about her, but she's going to tell you something about herself.
So I guess I've been with Project New Village since day one, and I'm really glad to be here on this day with wonderful people talking about food and your journeys, our journeys, if you will.
Thank you so much. I'm just so excited that we're all here together. And I just want to start off with just a question. And I want to ask, who or what was your biggest influence on your relationship with food growing up?
I think for me, my biggest influence would have to be my grandmother. She was a woman who was very generous, and it was a privilege to be invited into her kitchen. And I have a very fond memory of the first time I was, you know, eligible for this honor. And I ended up making a blackberry cobbler from scratch. My sisters and I had found these after one day at the pool, and we went back to my grandmother's house, and she was already cooking dinner, and we showed her our bounty. And she was just really happy that we'd be able to make some dessert. So we made a blackberry cobbler. We made some ice cream that same night, like with the churn. So it was just a really lovely home-cooked meal. And it was a moment where I got to feel really proud of myself and really connected with my family.
So with family, and I had a similar experience. My dad did a lot of the cooking, especially on Saturday. He would fix the waffles and bacon and eggs, and he was just like an octopus in the kitchen, and he was fascinating. And the thing I really loved about his whole presentation was that as he was prepping all of the food, by the time we sat down to the table, the kitchen was totally clean. And so that I've carried with me as I'm cooking. I want to make sure that everything is cleaned up, and as the food is done, the kitchen is ready for the next meal. How about you, Cynthia?
Oh, my goodness. My earliest memory is food. Not the greatest food, but it was delicious at the time. International House of Pancakes. I must have been like 3 or 4 years old and just enamored of all the tremendous selection of pancakes that were available. But for me, always, the kitchen has been the center, pretty much the center of my life. I had a grandmother that was influential as well. She was a fisherwoman, and before we had the term urban gardening, she was in LA and had chickens and just her own little like farm, urban farm going on in Los Angeles, not too far from where the airport is now. And my parents both are into food. My father on Sundays, his day was not Saturday, but Sunday. He would always be cooking in the kitchen. When my mom went to work, I just naturally took over and in the kitchen. So from about 11 on, I was cooking meals for our family and experimenting. So one of the other great influences, I'm of an age that Julia Child and Graham Kerr and some of the very early TV chefs were popular at the time I was beginning to experiment and play with food. And so they were influential as well. And that continued too as I went, grew up. I landed in San Francisco for college. And that was at the time that Alice Waters was doing her thing in San Francisco, which was absolutely incredible too. So lots of different inspirations, but I've just always been drawn to the kitchen.
To the kitchen. Yeah. The kitchen in my house was sort of a gathering place. At the table, we'd be eating and talking, and then we'd hear stories from my mom about food. And so that was really nice. We really enjoyed it as a family, just coming together and eating. And it's still a gathering place for company and family that come by. So I have another question. Are there any sacred dishes that you prepare? What are they? And are they connected to your culture, to just something you like?
All right. So I think as far as the sacred food goes, I've had some time to think. And one thing that keeps coming to the back of my mind is apple crisp. It's something that every woman in my family makes their own special, unique way. And I always joke, me as a redhead, I make a lot of ginger jokes, but I also love ginger as a culinary herb. so I make like a, I kind of like stew the apples in a ginger syrup before they go in.
Yeah.
And I personally like an apple crisp that has an oat topping. Some people just go for the like a Dutch crumble, but I think it needs a little bit more texture. And while I want to, you know, praise the health benefits of oats, they're not in there for the health benefits. yeah. Diane, Cynthia, anything sacred in your kitchens?
For me, it's the healing power of food that comes through. So one example is I do, and this beverage, not necessarily a food, but an onion broth, onion tea decoction with all kinds of, with turmeric and ginger and honey, and just the healing powers of those different ingredients all combined. For me, that whenever I make that, I feel like I'm in a sacred space because it's usually something I'm sharing too with someone who is not well. So that's one. Another similar one is fishbone broth, and with that, my husband is Peruvian, and he grew up with a fish head soup, chocano, and that for them was an every Sunday item that his father made for the family. His family was like 11 kids, and that was just part of their Sunday meal. And like the onion tea for me, fishbone broth is, and chocano in particular, is just such a healing, healing food. So both of those are examples of some of the things that for me are super, super sacred, special to make and share.
So I'm at this table because of my relationship with Project New Village. I'm not the cook per se that these two would be, have those traditions, right? So I'm not recalling a sacred kind of food for me.
Okay. Well, yeah. I'll share. I just recently, and this has just been recent, that I started using cocoa.
Oh.
And that's a very, it's healing. And there's a lot of native tradition with it. And so I started preparing the cocoa and using like nutmeg and the cinnamon, and you can use turmeric or anything, and just really nice and warm. And I love it because I'm not really a fan of like Hershey's chocolate. I mean, cocoa is the original and it actually heals the body. It's really good for the brain. And I'm so excited about it. So now it's part of my tradition. So now I can have some, what we call quote unquote cocoa, which I wasn't doing before, but now in cayenne pepper and oh my gosh,
yum.
It's just yum. And you feel so amazing when you drink it. So I like it that it does something for me that changes how I'm feeling. I feel lifted and I know something very special about it. So I'll share that. So thank you.
It's that particularly is rooted in history too, because when cocoa was first shared with the Europeans, it was not the Hershey's kind of cocoa that we have today, but a beautiful concoction with chilies and other Native American ingredients. So
yes,
lots of history with that.
Which
too.
Actually was ritualistic
correct.
Practice. And so that's my new wonderful thing
wonderful.
Is the cocoa. And I have to order it, but and just shave it off, you know. And it's just delicious. So let's see. I have another question. So what do you want people to experience or feel when you're cooking for them?
I know this may sound cliche, but it truly is love. Love, not just of that moment, but love of their own family history, mm-hmm. love of their culture, love of all the things that get evoked when you start talking about food and sharing food, the memories that it brings, any meal brings up typically of people maybe that have passed from the family or friends or yeah. So just for me, that is super important, is to be able to have that the space of a meal evoke love.
That's beautiful. Yes. Kelly?
I think if there's any parting feeling that I could be certain that people have when I am able to feed others, it's one of acceptance and inclusion. I think that's really important for me, especially with like the symbolism of the table and who's sitting at your table, who's not sitting at your table. And I hope that if I'm feeding somebody, that they know that they're welcome in my space, however they want to present.
I like that. That's wonderful.
It makes me also think of who's not at the table in the case of, our harvesters, whether they're farmers or fishermen or mm-hmm. whoever is providing the ingredients, they're not at the table physically, but the product, the harvest of their hands is there with us. And for me, honoring our harvesters is super important.
You're absolutely right. For me, I think it is, not I think, I know it is, like you said, the love. And also, I want people to feel just amazing. I want them to feel served. Mm-hmm. And it goes a little bit past the food. So you have the food, but then you have the presentation. So that's really important to me, the presentation of how it's served and what it's served on and how aesthetically it's arranged on the plate. And people are like, ooh, before they even go yum. You know what I mean? And they're ready to sit down and they feel good about being with a great company and everything's laid out so beautifully. I want them to feel served.
Nice. Very nice. Yeah. And people start, that's the presentation and the service aspect is so important. People, which this may be cliche too, but they really do start eating with their eyes and their nose and all of those,
like
it's all those sensations are activated even before you taste things. So having things presented right and shared during the preparation as well as when it's brought to the table to consume is super, super special.
It is, because they feel considered. Like, you did all this. You set it up like this. And this is just, they feel special. I know I do. So another question I want to ask, is there something that you eat now that at one point you did not like?
Yes.
Yes. Let's hear, Kelly.
This is, I don't know how often your taste buds change, if I'm in like that the perfect 7-year gap or whichever it may be. But there are some things that I'm realizing I didn't like when I was younger that I am like surprised. A cucumber is one of them. Didn't like it. I love the texture, but not the flavor necessarily. Mm-hmm. But now that I'm getting older, I'm actually kind of appreciating what cucumber has to offer. But I think the one that surprises people the most is cilantro. I used to not like cilantro and now I do. And I don't have the soap gene. I know what soap tastes like. It is not cilantro.
Okay.
but that's a new flavor that I'm just now coming around to. And I'm so excited to like try all these new foods. I used to not like street tacos with the raw onions and the cilantro. And like living in San Diego, that is just quintessential, I think, to being in this space. And now I feel in the fold. So I'm definitely looking forward to having cilantro on so many different kinds of things. Yeah,
yes,
just like how many new
that.
Ways can I relate this herb to food? Yeah.
Thank you. That was beautiful. Sylvia?
For me, vegetables and particular peas. Growing up as a kid, a lot of times our vegetables... And again, I'm of an age where canned peas, canned spinach, canned spinach may have given Popeye his strength, but it did not rate very highly for me on my list of favorite foods when I was a kid. But now vegetables are center of the plate. So it's been a good journey. And, you know, part of it is getting away from canned to fresh. But the other thing is just, you know, really getting to explore the infinite variety of flavors that are available when you step away from the grocery supermarket and go out into the harvests that, for example, that are there at Mount Hope in the community garden, and being able to pick something fresh and pop it in your mouth. And yeah, it's just, I've come to realize that, again, vegetables are center of the plate.
Great. Yeah. For me, it was a vegetable as well, and it's beets. And so coming up, I mean, sort of culturally, we had a lot of pickled things. Things were pickled. And so I didn't like that pickle. I mean, I couldn't get with the pickling.
The vinegar, yeah.
So I go, I don't like beets. I don't like this. I don't like that, because they were pickled. Everything was pickled. And my parents loved them and I couldn't eat them. But oh my goodness. And I think it was one of the first vegetables that I grew, a beet. Oh my goodness. I had no idea what I was doing. My children were really small. But when I tasted a fresh beet, now they have become my quote, because I like crunchy food, and we'll talk a little bit about what kind of food we like, but they're delicious. And those are like my chips. I just steam them, I kind of slice them or chunk them and put them in a baggie, and then I'm not looking for chips. I just need crunch. I just need something. I don't know what that is, but
sensory seeking.
Sensory seeking, exactly. Yeah. So beets for me, I absolutely love beets. Love, 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 love beets. And vegetables as well, because back then, a lot of the vegetables were like really overcooked. Really, you didn't even have to chew them. All you had to do was go, and it would slide down your throat because they were so slimy. And it wasn't, again, sensory seeking, but to be able to chew a beet and to know the benefit of the beet for your body. So I juice them and I do the chews and I put them in baggies. And when I'm somewhere, I'm not eating a Lay's potato chip. I'm chomping the are you eating a beet?
Yeah.
I go, I am eating a beet. So never ate a beet. And when I don't know what even made me try a fresh beet, but.
How about the leaf? You know, that's one of the things that took me a while to start actually cooking the tops, like
the
carrot tops,
yes.
For like carrot top pesto or
were you sauteing
beet greens.
Them?
Yeah, I use beet greens just like I would use kale or chard, and just include them as well. But I think that's one of the joys of being able to explore your food through the garden is to be able to sample all parts. Of the plant. Yeah.
And so. That's something we're learning. I mean, from the seed to the stem to the peel. Like if I have
right.
an orange that's from someone's tree or from a garden, I'll just eat it like an apple because it's all healthy. It doesn't have any wax on it. That's going to, you know,
right.
not go with my body. But if I'll just eat the whole thing because most of the nutrient is right there in that peel. So just eating the whole thing, the seeds, the watermelon wow. seeds, I chew them. People are making flour out of them.
Yes.
That's the newest thing that I've heard. Take those seeds. And so it's just amazing the transformation that food has taken.
It has.
Yes. And I love 50. All of the cultural pieces where, like you said, you're putting the onions with the cilantro. And it's like, now you got to have it, right?
Yeah.
You gotta have it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, because that's the way,
it's
that's
not
the
on
way
my
it
taco,
is.
My taco is not done yet.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. So maybe we'll do one more question. Let's see. I want to find one that's going to... okay. No, two more. So what's your favorite? Savory, salty?
Depends on the time of day.
Mm.
So I tend to, at nighttime, salt. I don't know why. But anything salty, just...
Sweet?
Savory, sweet,
salty, sweet.
Sweet usually for energy burst in the middle of the day.
Okay.
Yeah. And savory, I do like savory for breakfast. I've never been a big fan of, you know, cereals out of the box or mm-hmm. anything really super sweet for breakfast. And part of that for me maybe is I spent... sometime in growing up in Japan, and so we had fish for breakfast, and mm-hmm. you know it was not the kind of American breakfast that gets, certainly not the one that was promoted on commercials and
yes.
things like that. So yeah, I'm used to savory for breakfast, sweet in the day for okay. energy, and salty at night.
That's good. At least you know yourself. That's good. Kelly?
I like sweets through and through. It's one of those things that I've had to come to accept with myself and find pivots, because you can't sustain yourself on just sweets. It's a nice fantasy in Candyland, but not in real world. So absolutely, just trying to learn what fruit is going to, you know, fill that niche. And sometimes I just have to let it be and say, hey, that's not going to happen right now, and tomorrow's a new day. I do have a crunchy side too, just that, again, it's sensory seeking. It's, I want to hear the crunch even. And there are some crunches that I'll take over others. Like I like the crunch of a carrot over the crunch of a beet, but the crunch of jicama, unparalleled.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's delightful. With like lime and tahini too, to just bring the flavor up. So sweet, crunchy. Those are my mainstays for favorites.
I'm a crunchy girl. Anything that's when I was eating non-fresh food, I was crunching. And so now I like crunch. You know, I like those beets. I like those little cucumbers, little small ones.
Yeah.
Just take those and just eat those.
Yeah.
I like savory. I like the mixture of all of the different spices, which is why I love Thai food, because you can taste the basil, you can taste the garlic, you can taste the lemon, you can taste everything. And it's amazing to me that you can catch each one of those seasonings at a different time. I'm like, how do they do that? And so I try to do that with my cooking. And I do a curry, you know, lentil, coconut curry lentil, you know, vegan. And when I can taste all of the ginger and the turmeric and all of that, I'm like, oh, I'm going, you know, through the whole thing, because it's, that's delightful to me that all of those things can go into your mouth and you're just feeling like all amazing. All at one time, but you can taste them.
Activated.
Yeah. And one of the things that I did when I first started cooking was I would go to a place that I love to eat, and I would just eat really slowly so I could see what was in it. Mm-hmm. And then I'd go and fix it.
Yep.
And that's kind of how I started. And I said, yeah, it had this, it had that. I could taste this, I could taste that. And it was really, really a lot of fun. One last question. Describe yourself as a dish. What would you be and why? Ooh. Crunchy, savory.
That one's
that's
a thinker.
That's a thinker. As I think about that, because that's quite an interesting question. I think a little crunchy. Yeah. You know, I can be a little crunchy at times. And then I can also be very... something crunchy and savory, which would be something like a curry, because you've got the savoriness of the curry sauce and you've got the carrots in there. So a mixture of that and maybe something... I think those two. I think kind of crunchy and savory. And the reason why is because I'm looking at the savory like just very balanced and graceful and mild in life about things. Mm-hmm. And then the crunchy is... the piece where I have the courage to stand up for the things that I believe. So there's kind of like that grace, but there's that crunch. And then all that mixture of all of those seasonings that make me a well-balanced person.
I love that. Absolutely.
Yeah.
For me, I'd have to say ceviche because it just ties together... Fresh. So much history for me, so many different aspects of my life. It combines the harvest of the sea, the ocean, with harvest of the land, particularly here in San Diego. You know, when I make ceviche, I'm usually using a lot of ingredients from my garden. I love to garden in rocoto peppers and celery and cilantro and other herbs and orange. I tend to use oranges because that's what I have in my backyard, along with limes or lemons, whatever I happen to have on hand. It's also, for me, again, going back to nutrition, it's certainly something that's high in nutrition with all the, at least for us here, when we can grab local seafood and it's totally fresh and nourishing for us, that's really great. And history, too, which I probably started out with, which, you know, my grandmother was an influence for me as a fisherwoman, and my parents and a lot of our time as a family being in Southern California. It's definitely a Southern California food, as well as ties into my husband's family's heritage as well.
Beautiful. Thank you so much.
I kind of want to speak to that only in that I remember one of my classes I took was like a food, place, and culture.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't necessarily have the mind of like place making and how important your geography is to your, like, as an influence. And something that was eye-opening in that class is we were having a discussion with globalism. Everyone's moving everywhere, and it's still important to have traditional foods that reflect your culture and your values. But how do you do that in a completely new geography? And as an Irish American, I really appreciate here in San Diego the seafood, in that it does help me feel a little bit more connected. It's maybe not the same fish, definitely not the same seaweed, but it's still something that I want to try and incorporate in my diet, just to kind of have that connection.
Fantastic.
But I think to answer your question, I would be a pavlova with probably with like smoked strawberries.
Mm. Wow.
I did that a long time ago, and I haven't done it since, just because I haven't really turned my smoker on in a minute. But we let it stay in there, kind of like, what is it? We tossed it with a little bit of Chardonnay and a little bit of sugar to help bring up more of the juice from the strawberry. And then we just put it in low and slow. It got smoky. It got kind of like syrup jammy. So a little bit of that on a crunchy pavlova, I think, would be good. And I think it represents me in that, through all the things that I've come with smoke as a metaphor for maybe being smudged, that at the end of the day, you still have something that is really valuable and really delicious and still really meaningful, even if it maybe has a little bit of smoke damage.
I love that. This has been wonderful. I want to thank you, Cynthia and Kelly.
May I add something? You all have been talking geography, and I know you through this placemaking work we're doing. So what are y'all doing this summer? This will air at the beginning of the summer season. I know you're busy. I know the kinds of food justice things that you're putting together, like every day. I know where you come from, and I know and your work that you've done with the students at Morris and other places. So before we part here today, what's summer looking like for you? Your food geography, your food stories, I know that it carries with you everywhere you go. So summer 2025, what's that looking like?
I know one of the highlights for me will be the our seedling events over at the UVAS, the new UVAS space for Project New Village. So I've have been so looking forward to that. I think our first one is this Saturday. But every month being able to, for the next several months, being able to activate that space and interact with the neighbors in that area, and to further develop the relationships that were begun with the resident leadership groups that we shared, meetings that we shared during the spring. That's super important to me. I know that's going to be a highlight for the summer. Another highlight for me as a family event, my parents are celebrating their 70th wedding anniversary in mid-August. So we're already planning for that. And part of that is recognizing, in a way, I mean, they used to travel quite a bit, and Hawaii was one of their favorite places to go, and they can't really sit in a plane or go that distance anymore, so we're going to bring Hawaii to them. So my brothers and sisters and I and other family members are all working together to have a great luau for them in August. That's going to be a highlight.
One thing that I'm looking forward to this year that I actually didn't get to do last year was Summerfest. Oh. So I'm looking forward to that. I'm not sure if food's really going to be the main thing there, other than like connection, community. But I'm absolutely looking forward to that. And then my sister-in-law is expecting. So between late July and early August, I will become a new aunt again.
Yay.
Looking forward to that. Any plans, Roxanne, for the summer?
I actually do have some plans. I'm recently retired from my temporary full-time job that I had. And so I'm looking forward to really promoting and building my plant-based soulful vegan package of meals and desserts. So I'm excited about that. And I'm just looking for opportunities to just share with people that plants can be very healthy, are very healthy, and soulful, not like cardboard, but just tasty and savory. So I'm looking forward for opportunities with that.
Fantastic.
With that one, similar thing for me is, fingers crossed, I pass Department of Health food inspection on Friday. I'll be doing a micro enterprise home kitchen in National City to bring local seafood and harvest, garden harvest into the community. So should be exciting.
This Friday, you said?
For inspection, yeah. And so then if all goes well, be launching in early July. So
amazing.
Yes, yeah. I love that. Great for you.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, everyone, for being here. This has been great. Looking forward to summer.
Should be a great time.
Yes.
Thank you.